Hello and welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast,
where we dive into all things digital automation. I'm your host, Nandan Mullakara. While I'm not podcasting, I help people keep up with the fast-changing digital technologies at botnirvana.org. I hope you enjoy the show. Let's get right into it. We have Andy Thurai on our podcast today. He is VP and Principal Analyst at Constellation Research. Andy is an accomplished IT executive, having served in leadership roles at major companies like IBM, Intel, and Oracle. He's an expert in AI, AI ops, observability, cloud, and many other enterprise software. I've read many of his articles in publications such as Forbes, Harvard Business Review, and more. In this chat, we talk about the emergence of ChatGPT, Microsoft versus Google AI, AI ethics, and the future of AI. Let's listen in. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the Bot Nirvana podcast. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Can we start with a quick intro?
Sure. Hey, my name is Andy Thurai. I am a VP and principal analyst with an analyst firm, Silicon Valley analyst firm called Constellation Research. We specialize in emerging tech topics, particularly advising C-level audience.
Okay, excellent. And Thurai, I mean, so you have an AI at the end, right?
Yeah. Well, that's not a made-up name, by the way. That is my real name. It okay. So happened to be that I have AI in my name, at the end of the name, that is. And somebody pointed out, I didn't even realize that, about a year or two, somebody pointed out, and I thought it was too cheesy, so I never used it. But, you know, a few months ago, people have been kept asking, hey, you gotta use that. So I'm kind of using that. I know it's a little cheesy, but hey, you know, brings the point home.
Yeah, but .AI is the craze of the time.
That's right.
Right now. And a lot of hype around AI. And, you know, I know you are an analyst covering AI, been doing that for quite some time now. So you've seen this recent hype in AI, especially with ChatGPT and this whole generative AI coming in. So how do you see this evolving as we progress?
So people tend to think that AI is all new. One thing I want to bring to bear and let people know is that AI is not new, right? I mean, the original cognitive systems have been around, what, since 70s and 80s. And I used to work at IBM the time that when we beat the Jeopardy champion of the world. And even before my time, IBM used to play the AI systems, decision systems used to play with the chess champion of the world at that time and defeated. So it's a natural progression, right? And it didn't go that far on those days because of many limitations, software limitations, stack limitation, knowledge limitation, even the data limitation. The data was not enough for machine learning systems to learn from the data to act on it. So there are a ton of limitations. So the AI systems were, to an extent, it was ahead of its time. So they were, you know, failed in certain aspects and it succeeded in certain aspects. But coming to ChatGPT, you know, in a sense that, you know, they took a chance, they being OpenAI and Microsoft, took a chance by releasing it when others were a little bit afraid. I mean, Google's Bard has been going at it for a while, too. And then they were equally decent system on those days, except that fiasco once that happened. But outside of that, you know, Google's AI have been pretty decent for many, many years, as you know. But they decided not to come out with a bang like Microsoft and OpenAI didn't release that. But with Microsoft ChatGPT and with the user-friendly user interface they put together, what had happened is the business folks, the non-tech folks, are able to use the AI in a way that they want to figure things out. They were able to converse with AI in a natural language. And they were able to figure out what they want to ask it and then, you know, sort of do prompt engineering by themselves to an extent and get proper answers what they want. And the ease of use to the masses, particularly business users, and give them opportunities for the non-techie users to figure out how to use AI. And they were like, oh, my God, that's all AI is about. I could use it. I love it kind of thing. Right. And that's one. And the second thing, which is not many people discuss, is the fact that how risk tolerant everybody has become, whether as an individual or enterprises. They just use ChatGPT for get that code generation or content generation or what have you. A few years ago, if you were to do that, you know what kind of approvals you need to get from your legal, your corporate governance standard boards on the whole nine yards? Now, the risk tolerance and appetite has come up. So if there's any, forget about technology, LLM, who is best, because that leaderboard keeps changing on a daily basis. But the concept of getting them ready to use it, the increase in the risk appetite and tolerance and wide usage, Microsoft killed it. And as I keep calling it regularly, Microsoft had the, or the world had seen the how a most successful POC will look like. That's ChatGPT.
Yeah, a successful POC and a genius move, right? Like, it was not Microsoft doing it, it's OpenAI. So they take that risk. And it really worked out, as you said. It's been democratic, people could use it. It was English. So like somebody was saying, the hottest programming language is now English. So
it is. It is, right?
Yeah.
And that in itself is a thing, right? And you mentioned a point, there's a nuance to it, people forget. Even though it's Microsoft-ish, they still kept the church and state separate, with Microsoft is the company backing the whole thing, but still is OpenAI. Imagine if OpenAI failed, Microsoft could have washed their hands and walked away, saying that, you know, they are a startup, we funded them, we tried, failed, move on. And that's where, in my mind, Google did it with a clean state and church separation. Yeah. They were able to do everything under Google name. And then, you know, how that POC went, or demo of Bard went, and it took a dive. It took a beating. So
The $120 billion lost in the market. Yeah. So that was something Google didn't figure out. But I think Google has been getting back at it, right? I mean, the recent announcements, especially with Gemini, I think they're getting it back at it. What do you think?
I agree. So not only the Gemini announcement, but also the Duet AI combination of things that they announced.
Yes.
I painstakingly spend time and looking at a lot of those things, looking at the videos, looking at some of the things what he did. And there are also quite a few initiatives they have on the validating and verifying the authentic content, because that's one of the issues going forward, Nandan. I think, honestly, one of the major issues that, you know, I know you wanted to discuss some of the downfalls of AI. My major concern is the fake content that's created, synthetic content created by AI is so real nowadays that people could use that to game, whether it's a political or financial system. And then thereby, you know, the government could be toppled. Governments could be toppled with that, right? Sure. And Google is doing some initiatives on that front too, on putting whether a digital watermarking, you know, identifying some sort of a synthetic content that you'd be able to identify it back. I mean, the efforts are not still 100% because it's easy to manipulate digital synthetic watermarking and so on and so forth, but at least a step in the right direction when others are not thinking it. But to answer your original question, I think Google not only has caught up with Microsoft with their latest wave of announcements, in a sense, they might be even a little ahead, in my view.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, no, Google is the people who came up with Transformers. You know, they are leagues ahead in this whole game. And as you said, they have the right perspective in terms of having adequate controls. So it could be that they could be the solution. We never know. And also OpenAI themselves are bleeding. There are some reports that they are spending a lot of money to keep the whole thing going. I think it's great that they introduced AI to the world. It's made AI exciting for every one of us. Now there are many players to choose from, which is
you got it. You nailed it. That's actually the truth, right? The successful POC led to widespread usage of using the UI, ChatGPT UI, to get answers. Yes, people are signing up for try it out, maybe $10, $20 a month or whatever. Yes, you got some adoption. Yes, your revenues went up slightly. But that's not where you make your killer money, right? I mean, that's not where NVIDIA is making its killer money. They're selling by components to you, whether it's chip or networking or, you know, the boards. That's where they're making their money. So you can't just, you know, get a $10 subscription from people to make money. You got to have the major enterprises use your cloud to either LLMs or use it for inferencing, use it in some of their use cases to make the money. And in my conversations with a lot of enterprises, they are very, very, very hesitant to use generative AI to begin with. And on top of it, given all the issues that ChatGPT had had, from privacy to other issues, even ethical and bias and whatnot, they are still not 100% production. They are very on the fence, I would say, right? And then to confuse things up, Meta came up with their open source model as well. And there are rumors that they are working on a multi-model, you know, a bigger model, which is supposedly bigger than actually. More in fact, I just had that published something today, that they are working on something that could be as big or even better than GPT-4, which is completely open source.
Right.
So when you have this many players up, whether it's, you know, Google is coming from one angle, and AI 21 Labs have their own, you know, variations of that. There are about 5 or 6 LLM providers, as you know. And then there are open source providers that are providing models between Falcon and Llama, which is providing almost equal performance. So is Microsoft going to make a killer out of this? I don't know. I mean, maybe they will, because they are trying to do a few things, including trying to offer people to train their own LLM models and so on and so forth. Maybe they could. I wish them all the best. But at this point, it's too early. It's way too early.
It's too early. And they've kind of a bit lost the initiative. I mean, they thought that Bing can ride on this wave. It didn't. And now Google is catching up. Others are catching up. Like I said, Claude is catching up. Anthropic is catching up. So it's really exciting times, right?
You made the most important point of all. If somebody listens to it, that one statement, what he made, this I've talked about it multiple times. I've also discussed this in another podcast, that search engine business is a major, major, major business for Google. And Microsoft, even Nadella, there's not something, you know, NDA, Nadella himself has admitted, and in his, you know, earnings calls he discussed, our goal is to use AI to get as much search possible from Google. His initial goal was to get 5%. And before this, not many people ever use Bing for search,
right,
except Microsoft employees, of course, our partners, right? And now they thought AI would push them into the limelight in the search by using a natural language search, of course, using, you know, Bing or some combination of that. And then they were able to get anywhere between 5 to 10% of the Google search revenue, which is huge. And that's what they were going after. But do you really think Bing has picked up any steam because of ChatGPT? I don't think so.
And I don't think so, yeah.
Yeah. So that didn't work. So that's why Google took a big dive and Microsoft took, you know, revenue boost. But now, I don't know. It's when the dust settles down, we'll see. But I don't think so.
Yeah, still Google has the market capitalization to catch up on, but
but
I think we touched upon this, you know, the moral and ethical implications of AI, and, you know, like Google is more controlled. I think Microsoft, that's also is focusing on that, though it's letting OpenAI a bit of a room in terms of doing that. OpenAI also has been reining in its model. So, and then, like you say, there's open source models are now in the wild. So it's a lot of concerns out there regarding the moral, ethical things that these powerful models bring, right? So you recently wrote an article on HBR about the trolley problem, right? Like, you're still not ready for an unsupervised AI. So can you talk about it?
Sure. It's unfortunately not even close that we are ready for it. So in that article I discussed with my co-author, you know, obviously the trolley problem is a very classic problem of psychological decision making, saying that, hey, you know, if something were to happen, what would you do given the situation? And I also give my personal example in there discussing why AI wouldn't make that. So when it comes to, this is what I keep repeating, right? When it comes to what do you call the data-based pattern finding, unearthing patterns and making decisions based on that, AI is beyond human capabilities. Humans cannot even think of that, especially when you have a ton of data, you know, terabytes, petabytes of data, finding a pattern within that, analyzing that, figuring it out, whether it's a seasonality trend. AI, machine learning in particular, excels. Machine learning portion of AI excels, right? But when it comes to making a subjective decisions that, you know, whether you are to fire certain people, or I'll give you this classic example. I wouldn't name which hospital it is, but there was a hospital in the in the let's say greater Boston vicinity, they were trying to use AI to, during the COVID time, to make the decisions on, you know, who they have to admit, because the number of beds available were way less than the number of patients coming in. They were trying to use AI system to make a decision by saying that, okay, you know, we want to figure out who has the highest probability of survival, one, and who would occupy our beds very less. For example, if you are to get somebody who is already sick enough or old enough, they might occupy the bed for 2 months or 3 months or what have you. But whereas I could rotate about 20 or 30 people and save, you know, in the time frame. So AI can make objective decisions, you know, easily. But when it comes to subjective decision on deciding those things, AI's decisions, while it may be even right, it may not gain popularity or it may not gain acceptance, you know, when it, particularly when it goes to legal system or even through the human approval process, right? So that's where AI fails. So the bottom line is that AI can make objective decisions given enough data properly, but when it comes to subjective decisions, which involves even emotional or rationality, and then trying to figure out, okay, oh man, this person doesn't have a job, so I got to do something for them, or they have a sick family member they are taking care of, so we cannot fire them. Those kind of things, AI doesn't care. So in that sense, it could be difficult. I don't think AI will ever get there. And then there is also a problem of data bias there based on the data that it reads too, which is another whole big topic, right?
Yeah, true. And I keep saying that this is an asymptotic problem, because when automating, we have this problem in the document processing field where you can't get the document read completely with AI. I mean, it goes from 60% to probably 95%, some documents 100%, but never all documents 100%. So, and it's the same thing with autonomous cars. I was talking to autonomous cars expert, like the last mile problem and this trolley problem. So all these things makes it, I think, an asymptotic problem where you will probably tend towards getting to 100%, but you will never be at 100%. And so there will be things where humans have to be in control. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, we have to have humans in control and then let AI do where it's doing the best, right?
Right. So a couple of points, thoughts on that, what you mentioned, right? I posted, I think, last week on LinkedIn. It was actually a pretty funny posting. There was somebody who was driving a Tesla, and then Tesla got behind one of the horse-drawn carriage.
Yeah.
And then Tesla couldn't figure it out, because it doesn't seem, this is the problem with the AI.
Yeah.
If it encounters what we call it as unknown unknowns that it hasn't seen before, and it has to make a decision based on that, the AI systems get thoroughly confused. And that's exactly what Tesla did. It was trying to figure out if the carriage is a big truck or a human walking or biking or a car. It was going through the things, and it was making decisions based on that. So it was dropping down the speed of the car based on that, because it has to adjust for the speed in which car travel. If it's a truck, you can go faster. If it's a human, you don't want to go closer. So it was, you could see that literally dropping it down and up to about 5 miles to 10 miles to 20, it was all over the place, right? And if it involves life-making decision, for example, would you want AI to pull you a plug if you're in the hospital, if it makes a decision saying that, you know what, you and I don't have a survival chance, we gotta give the bed to someone else, you know, pull the plug on them. Would you agree with that?
No.
That's the problem we have, right?
No.
But that's the problem with AI, with subjective decisions.
Yeah, as I said, you know, we'll probably, hopefully, not get there fully. I mean, just for humanity.
You have to always have human in the loop.
Human in the loop.
You know, that got to be there, because the ultimate, not only about the decision making and approval process, but even the execution of it. If you have AI system make the decisions and AI and robots execute it, without that, the disaster is going to strike sooner than later. You know, beyond human comprehension. You know.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I like to call it human in control. I don't like the word human in loop. It just means that humans are secondary. You know, humans are first.
Fair point. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Humans have to have a control on what the final say is always. I'm agreeing with you 100%.
Yeah. So let's switch tracks and talk about some productionizing of this whole thing that's going on right now, right? Because, yeah, I mean, there are the concerns, there are controls to be put, there are guardrails to come in, but people are steaming ahead, right? And we have a generative AI tech stack that has emerged. And I know you're working in the MLOps space now. So what are your thoughts on productionizing this AI at this moment?
So when it comes to productionizing it, there are two variations to it. One is if you are, let's say that you're using LLMs that are hosted by someone else outside, such as OpenAI or even Bard, in which case your tech stack or your needs are different. For example, you need to figure out, a lot of companies don't want their information, sensitive information, to go to this place. And you could control using corporate governance and laws and, you know, rules you put in place and employee handbook and educate your employees. That's one way to do it. The other way would be you got to put some sort of a solutions that, you know, similar to DLP, not exactly DLP, but similar to that, that look at the data that's going back and forth and looking at, you know, the sensitive data is going outside in people's trained query, block it out, or even if I'm asking a specific question that's sort of a sensitive in nature. For example, if I were to ask ChatGPT how to make a bomb or where to buy a big gun, then, you know, that's when you need to make a decision saying that, is that allowed, that we can we allow this person to ask this question? Because the corporation owns a liability for it if you start doing that from within a company, right? So that's one example, but there are things you could do. There are so many things, whether it's IT software systems related and whatnot. So that kind of a control, sort of a mildly controlling environment, because let me tell you this, if you try to block usage of ChatGPT to the employees, not going to happen.
Right.
Almost all CIOs that I have a conversation with, if you block it because people want to somewhat rebel against you, they will figure out a way to use it, whether it's using their home computer, whether it's using their phone or using some other system, they'll figure out a way to use it. So the better way to do that would be you'll either put policies in place saying that what is the right usage model, right way of using it, and wrong way of using it. What are the things you can do and cannot do, which need to come from the legal departments, the HRs and administrative and corporate teams, governance teams that need to come, right? And the second one is that you got to have some technology solutions to limit what goes out and what comes back in. And the other problem is also, for example, if information comes back from the LLMs that, you know, you're asking the questions, first of all, do you know if LLM is hallucinating or giving the right answers? If it is not hallucinating, do you have a proper citation? Otherwise, do you have to go and find the citation to tag with it? Because as a company, if you cite something, you need to give a proper citation. Otherwise, you could become liable for it, right? Or if one of your developers go and ask for a, you know, code generation from one of the GitHub's Copilot or something else, you know, it could give probably a wrong code that you may not be able to put it. So either you have to have your humans validate that, or you could have some system to make sure that, you know, that's not vulnerable and whatnot. So that's on if you're using the pure LLM to send the data out to get the information back in. But if you're doing your own LLM training, that requires a whole lot of different tools, right? I mean, the previous one, I should have added prompt engineering, some of those things as well. So LangChain and orchestration, all of those things. But in the productionizing of LLM or LLM ops, as they call it, similar to MLOps, it has a whole set of other requirements, you know, your data capabilities. So companies like Databricks or Snowflake or those kind of data lake, you know, information gathering and getting it ready to train models. And then the model training frameworks and the hardware becomes important, you know, whether it's you got to have a distributed training, things like, you know, whether Ray or Dask or... There are so many new things that came up that, you know, the tech stack is growing like rapidly, like crazy. What is favorable yesterday is not favorable tomorrow. It's growing that fast. So I don't have a solid answer of what people should be using all of it. But again, you know, depending on what your choice and need is and look at it specifically and then choose the best of breed tools.
Okay, excellent. And so you've been talking to companies. What do you see as a trend in terms of are people planning to use local models, like you mentioned, or they're okay to use a cloud model or with APIs?
So the cloud model with APIs, again, depends on what you're trying to do. If you're using it for certain items to, you know, have your generative AI answer, whether it's a content generation purposes or answering certain questions, certain areas that are willing to and open to use API models. But if you're talking about using a full LLM with your own private data, so I see one or two trends emerge. One is either people take the, you know, existing LLMs, whether it's like Falcon or Llama, and then train using your corporate data, even though those models are not as big as ChatGPT. So retraining is comparatively cheaper and easier to do. And then you could either get that from them and get trained with your own data, which is not cheap, by the way. It costs still a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then you can host it, and the hosting and inference costs could be expensive too. That's one way to go. The other way would be a lot of these companies, including AI21, even OpenAI came with a recent announcement as well, that you could have them retrain the model using your own data and then host it. And there, the training itself, sometimes depending on the agreement you have, may not be that expensive. They might even do it for you. But on the assumption that, you know, at the back end of it, you'll use a certain amount you will consume to make it work for them. Look, at the end of the day, even though everybody's offering things for free now, it's still in a trial mode. That's why it's free. But keep in mind, there is no free lunch. Yep. If you have to use it to make money for your business, you got to figure out a way on what is more efficient for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so let's also talk about observability and SecOps, because your audience probably want to understand. What do you think of that? I mean, a lot of people coming up with Gen AI tools in that area too, right?
Yeah, so most of the help I've seen in the observability and SecOps, DevSecOps area I've seen generally is the integration of the natural language processing querying into the systems, which was a little bit harder to do before. For example, if something were to happen, somebody, an expert, has to manually go everywhere and search for the prior occurrences, or search in case of observability, you got to search for data or an incident data and look at all the, you know, whether it's the logs or what have you, and figure out what exactly went wrong and try to fix that incident, which takes time. Right. And that's why major incidents take forever to resolve. The problem could be very simple. Somebody changed some configuration or something, or maybe they changed one microservice, you know, whatever, and it affects everything and pulls a plug. I mean, many companies, including Netflix, I'm not trying to pick on them, but, you know, they had major outages because of that. Very small change brings the whole house down, right? Mm-hmm. So in the past, the experts, the analysts, have to spend a ton of time in figuring out what the actual problem is. And then once they find out the root cause, they can figure out how to solve it. But the combination of already existing a lot of AI ops tools in the market and observability data collection, able to collect the data from everywhere, and the ability to converse using natural language programming and ask questions, that takes the observability and AI ops and incident management to the next level from what I've seen with companies. Some are ahead of others in that game. I don't want to mention names and promote any vendors, but there are some vendors who are able to give you abilities that you'll go and say, hey, have we seen this kind of incident before? And then if it answers that, yes, we have, how did we fix it? And, you know, so you have a knowledge-based repository. You're basically conversing with that using your natural language. So it can help you identify the root cause. It could help you identify the fixes. It could help you fix it. It could also communicate with both customers and outbound. For example, if an incident comes in, you could always talk to the system and say, hey, you know what? Send information to my important customers saying that, you know, we know the problem and we are looking at it. We'll have an ETA in about 2 hours availability, or some combination thereof. So it allows you to bring your game to the next level by conversing with the systems using natural language rather than writing query after query, particularly if you are in the observability field. If you are to write queries to get the observability data, you know how hard it is. The proper efficient query itself takes hours to write, if not more. And then when more people get involved, it gets even more confusing to do the root cause analysis. But having the systems help you find that using a natural language querying, that's huge.
Yeah.
And it's I mean, there are companies doing really good stuff in that area, applied use case of generative AI.
Excellent. And I think that's an awesome use case. And I think this can even apply to other areas too, right? Like support tickets and things like that. A lot of progress or a lot of things happening right now in this kind of area where you can integrate a knowledge base or this logs and like chatbots. Copilots is coming up. That's pretty exciting. So as we progress, like during this year and probably a little bit ahead, I don't want to, I usually ask 3 years, but I stopped asking now. So as you progress, what do you see as most exciting thing coming up in AI?
Oh man, that's a lot of stuff, man, because this is one thing that I come to realize when it comes to AI in particular, change is common theme, and you should never be able to predict what the art of the possible, you know, even 6 months down the road. I mean, look, LLM is not new. Generative AI is not new. The foundational models have been around for a lot of time. Even ChatGPT itself was released almost like the original version was released a few years ago. And the latest one that became popular was released when last November, December timeframe. So that's been, even then that has been, even that version has been around for a while. It gained traction all of a sudden around this, I don't know, about April or early summer or late springtime. All of a sudden, people are like, oh, my God, you know, we got to be using that. So it went wild after that. And then we had the shortest possible winter, as I say, for AI. But now it's all systems go. So prediction wise, we will try to automate as many things as possible. That's for sure. I mean, the low risk and mundane task that doesn't need human intervention, not only will be automated, it has to be automated. I mean, it's been the RPA and then Bart, others, as you well know, your field, you know, it's been going on for a while now, whether it's document processing. I mean, if I were to send my insurance document, most companies don't have a human looking at it. It's all automated process, right? The intelligent document processing, the whole nine yards. That's all I've been around for a while, but I see lot more of such automations coming in. But unfortunately, with that also, then I see the opportunities of, you know, the job losses coming with it too. A lot of jobs, low-level, unskilled or moderately skilled jobs would be lost. There is no denying that. You know, even IBM has stated many times that, you know, they're going to lay off a lot of software engineers too. They're going to use the AI to do it. That's, it'll be interesting to see. But I don't have hopes at that high level. There are so many. I mean, obviously, if you know, look at that, I believe it's Wendy's that's trying out a completely automated drive-through kind of system. So those kind of systems will replace low-level, low-skill, low-risk systems. I mean, I don't expect AI to replace neurosurgeons in the next year or two or anything like that, right? But the low jobs would be replaced, and there's no denying that. And yeah, so that's one I see that will come. And the second one, which is a bothersome area for me, the content production, the synthetic content production is going to hit the all-time new. And it's going to be hard to distinguish between real versus fake data. Even now, I posted multiple postings on LinkedIn. There are, you could hardly ever tell the truth, because AI is able to learn from the existing image or systems, and it can change it into, morph it into what you want. It is not, unless AI puts some synthetic watermark or content process that be able to find it, you're not going to be able to find it. So the fake content is going to be another major problem in my view. And the third one, I'll stop with that, because there is so much synthetic data is being out there in the real world, in the next few years, the newer AI models you train is going to be trained on the synthetic data, not on the real world data, which means basically AI training AI, which is dangerous in my view. So there need to be some control on the synthetic content or data and the quality of the data, and whether or not you are using that synthetic content to produce actual AI models, because then you're talking about AI producing AI and controlling AI, you know? So those are my views in the next short term, in about a year or two.
Yeah, a lot of opportunities and concerns too. So let's hope we get over that and we stick to the more positive side. So Andy, thank you so much for being with us today. And before we go, where can people find and connect with you?
Awesome. Hey, thank you so much, first of all, for having me. I know we talked so many times that we wanted to do this, and finally, I'm glad we were able to do that. So I'm quite talkative on LinkedIn, so people can find me on LinkedIn, obviously, you know, under my name, Andy Thorai. And also I'm on Twitter, though I don't use it, or whatever they call it nowadays, X or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't use it that often nowadays. But again, it's the same name as well, at Andy Thorai. Okay. And generally, if people message me, I'll respond, unless they're trying to sell me something, of course. So love to engage with the customers.
Yeah, thank you so much. I will leave a link to your LinkedIn and Twitter so that people can find you. I'll also leave a link to your HBR articles, which we referred. So again, Andy, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Take care now.
Thank you for joining the Bot Nirvana podcast. Appreciate if you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you're consuming your podcast. Catch the show notes on botnirvana.org. While you are there, feel free to explore more free digital automation resources and more. See you next time.